You've probably heard about the massive garbage patch that is swirling in the Pacific Ocean, but there's been a patch of plastic debris floating in the Atlantic Ocean for quite a long time as well, although it's only been monitored for the past 22 years. Joining us on today's second underreported segment are Kara Lavender-Law and Giora Preskorevsky, both oceanographers at the Sea Education Association. Both took part in the organization's recent expedition to examine the accumulation of plastic debris in the North Atlantic Ocean, and they'll explain where the trash comes from and what two decades of research on it has revealed. Hello. Welcome to our show.
Thanks very much. A pleasure to be here.
Good to talk to you.
Can you explain what the Atlantic's garbage patch looks like?
Well, this is Giora, and I have been spending the last couple summers in the Atlantic and the Pacific. And I was out in the Atlantic this past summer, and what it looks like is pretty much like any other part of the ocean with just a couple exceptions. One is when you hit these extraordinary high concentrations of plastic, and then you can see buckets and shoes floating by in more regular increments. But most of the plastic is millimeter size that you can't see from the deck of a ship. And so it looks pretty much like any other place in the ocean until you start to really examine it with net tows and scientific techniques.
So it's less obvious than the Texas-sized garbage patch in the Pacific Ocean. Kara?
I would say that's actually a misperception about the garbage patch in the Pacific. In either ocean basin, as Giora said, the majority of the plastic pieces are just millimeters in size, and unless you know exactly what you're looking for and you have a very flat, calm day, these are really impossible to see from the sea surface. So the idea of a floating island or a floating landfill is actually a common misperception.
But I've seen pictures of the one in the Pacific, and it's this big swirling mess, isn't it? Or did I only see the most dramatic images?
Well, I suspect what you saw were images of large floating fishing debris without a scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the ones that if you do a Google image search, or the images that are often correlated with these articles, there's just a few of them that have been really out in the public for the last 5 years, and most of them are pictures not from the open ocean, but from bays or rivers. In fact, where you can see obviously that it's not in the open ocean, but it's in some land close to the land sourced. Area like a bay.
Are there similar trash patches all throughout the oceans?
That's a great question. And really what's unique about the North Atlantic and the North Pacific is, first of all, the circulation, the ocean currents that are carrying debris, but also the fact that these are places that we've looked for plastic trash or any other kind of trash. But the same physics that governs that ocean circulation and those surface currents that carry this plastic debris to collect in those particular regions is also present in the South Pacific, South Atlantic, and the Indian Oceans. So I would say it's likely that there are additional regions of accumulated plastic debris in those oceans, but we haven't yet looked for it.
Now, people have been dumping stuff in the oceans since people started dumping stuff. But this is different because it's plastic?
Yeah.
Well,
one of the
you first, Kara.
One of the fascinating which one?
I don't care.
All right. One of the fascinating things I think about this is that these regions have been known out for centuries. The sailors in the 1400s knew about these still regions with collections of seaweed and shipwrecks. And now that we've gone to plastics in the last 50, 60 years, now these regions are become known for their plastic accumulations.
That's right. I would add that there is plenty of other types of trash that is entering the oceans, but plastic floats, and that's what makes it so prevalent in these regions.
But I've heard that although the Pacific garbage patch is growing, the one in the Atlantic doesn't seem to be. Why is that?
Well, we just published a study looking at a 22-year record of the concentration of plastic debris in this part of the Atlantic where it accumulates. And it's a bit of a mystery. In fact, I would say in terms of the size of the region, first of all, we don't actually know the size of the region in either ocean basin. There have not been enough data collected to define the boundaries of the regions where this debris is collecting. But in the Atlantic, when we looked over this 22-year time period from 1986 to 2008, we expected to see an increase in plastic debris just based on the fact that we know that global production of plastics has increased over that time period, and from Environmental Protection Agency records, we know that the disposal of plastic in the municipal waste stream has increased. So that suggests that some amount of plastic is likely still entering the ocean, but we don't exactly know why we're not finding it. We have a number of hypotheses.
Such as it's breaking down in the water?
Yeah, that's right. The way that we collect the plastic in the ocean is using a very fine mesh net that has a mesh about a third of a millimeter in size. So we know that sunlight and just the action of the waves in the ocean can act to break these plastics into smaller and smaller pieces. So one idea is that perhaps a portion of these is breaking down into pieces smaller than the net that we use to collect them. So just passing through the net, and we're not accounting for everything that's floating out there.
Oceans are actually made of three different levels. Are these mostly on the upper level?
Yeah, so we do our net tows on the surface, so that's skimming the top, you know, foot of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
We have recent evidence that shows that it does get mixed down 50 feet to 80 feet maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But below that, we haven't ever really seen plastic sinking in the open ocean, sinking to depth or even to the bottom, and that's in the open ocean. In the coastal oceans, you do see plastics, the denser types of plastic, like peat, the clear Coke bottle type plastics. Those are found near coastal in the sediments. So they are sinking in the sediments, but we never really observe them out in the open ocean.
Well, in the case of the Gulf, where we've had the BP explosion, the ocean goes down 5,000 feet, and at the bottom, the water is actually, it's from the Arctic. It never even reaches the surface. It's very cold. Would plastic break down more in warm water than in cold water?
I think there has been some evidence of that, but I'm not sure that the experiments have really been done. You know, in the open ocean, it's not to say that there isn't plastic at the bottom of the ocean. We just haven't really looked. So I don't know that we know the answer to that question. And just as with the oil spill, you know, people are looking at the presence of different microbes and bacteria that might be using these different types of materials as a food source.
I'm talking to two oceanographers from the Sea Education Association, Cara Lavender Law and Giora Pruskarowski. We're talking about the garbage patch in the North Atlantic. And when we say the North Atlantic, where is the largest patch? Is it in a place that ships tend to go through?
Yeah, sure. So the center of the region is around 30 degrees north, which is latitude, which is about the latitude of Georgia. Or Atlanta, Georgia. But this is out central Atlantic that we're talking about. And there are ship routes, especially from Gibraltar and the English Channel to Panama Canal. That's the most trafficked. There will be ships coming through there. But for the most part, this is a very isolated, one of the most isolated spots on Earth.
But I'd imagine the swirl gets disrupted by ocean storms. Does it then get dispersed all over the Atlantic?
This is actually a good point. You know, again, we're used to hearing this term garbage patch, which implies kind of a uniform area of plastic debris collecting. But in fact, if you look closely, there's a large amount of variability, you know, 10, 20 miles apart. So we tow these nets, and even if you're in this region where you expect to find a lot of plastic debris, you really can't predict how much you're going to collect in any given net tow, and that's because of the effects of things like storms and current variability and really motion on scales that we haven't even yet begun to look at.
What effect does the trash have on the health of the ocean overall? Do any of the creatures of the sea eat the stuff?
Yeah, this is a good point, and it's an interesting question that we really haven't explored too deeply. Certainly everybody's seen the pictures of entanglement in six-pack rings or fishing nets, and so that's certainly a threat. And ingestion by seabirds is also another media darling of an image with the albatross stomach contents.
Mm-hmm.
But we have consistently observed fish eating pieces of plastic, and the big question for me is, how is it affecting the smallest parts of the food chain, so the zooplankton? Are the zooplankton eating it? And if so, how does that cascade up the food chain? We know that plastics are manufactured with plasticizers, with toxic plasticizers in it. And furthermore, as they sit in the open ocean, they also act as a magnet for other persistent organic pollutants. So the plastics floating in the ocean are a source of toxins to the environment, and we're really interested in how the food chain is starting to interact with these toxic pieces of plastic.
Recently, in a discussion about what happened in the Gulf, my expert said that we know a lot more about outer space than we know about our own oceans, and that's partly because of funding problems. Is that a concern? Because you keep on saying we're not exactly sure, and I'm assuming that's because we're only just beginning to do this kind of research.
I think that's absolutely correct, and one of the challenges of oceanography is that it's a very, very difficult place to study. I mean, you either need to go out on a ship, which is very expensive, or develop instruments that can observe the ocean from space or remotely so that you don't have to take a ship out. So I think that's absolutely correct. You know, and then when you look at the total amount of funding dollars that have gone to oceanography versus space research, it's a vast difference. But I think in terms of especially this issue of plastic debris or other types of man-made debris in the oceans, while the public has been aware of this for quite some time, I think scientific interest also is just now starting to really accelerate. So hopefully we'll see some increases in funding.
Yeah, so the trip that Karen and I put together this past summer to go out further east than we've ever than Sea Education Association has ever been before was the first federally funded research expedition dedicated solely to the study of plastics in the ocean. So that's sort of where the state of the funding is, and you know, if public perception helps drive it, which I think is the case in the NOAA funding source that we got, hopefully funding will continue to improve. And as the science starts to kick up, I think the funding will follow.
Didn't the Industrial Protection Agency start a program in 1991 to recapture industrial plastic pellets? Does that apply to our oceans? Do you know?
Yeah, I think you're referring to the Operation Clean Sweep that was put into place voluntarily by the plastics industries. And that actually was a very interesting finding in our recent study. We did find a statistically significant decrease in these plastic resin pellets, which are essentially the raw material for any consumer plastic goods that you might buy. We did find a decrease in that area of high concentration over time. So it looks like those regulations are having an impact in lowering the number of pellets lost to the sea.
Well, what can we do to clean up this trash vortex? Just drag big fishing nets through?
Well, big fishing nets aren't going to get it, and I think if we drag small nets through, you're really going to do more harm than good, because you're going to be collecting as much zooplankton, which is the base of the animal food chain, as plastic. And in my opinion, there really is no feasible or credible way to clean this up.
There's no credible way to clean it up? We're just going to let it grow?
Well, I think
after a while, we'll be sailing through just plastic.
Well,
I think the key is restricting it from entering the ocean to begin with.
Exactly. I think that the ocean has an amazing ability to buffer itself and take care of pollutants and degrade them and absorb them, but we can't just keep putting plastic into the ocean.
And is the United States the worst offender here?
I don't know that we know the answer to that. I mean, this comes back down to the question of, you know, we get lots of questions, where is this coming from? You know, who can you blame? And from the actual pieces that we collect, we have absolutely no indication of where they originated or even what type of object these pieces originated from. You know, we know that plastic is consumed globally and that, you know, you really need to look carefully at how the waste is handled and the recycling rates and things of that nature, I think, because we can't actually directly measure the inputs.
Now, how much interaction is there between the various connecting waters? Would the oil that's been and methane that's in the Gulf and all the dispersants, would they be drifting into this area?
Certainly it's a possibility. We have no evidence that's saying for sure it is, but on this recent trip this past summer, We collected something like 180 tar balls over the course of a 35-day expedition, and most of the tar certainly was had no chance of being from the Gulf, but some tar was very sticky and very fresh, and we preserved it for geochemical analysis. So there's a possibility, and certainly the physics say that, you know, debris that gets in from the Gulf into the Loop Current and out into the Gulf Stream will at some point likely make its way to these gyre systems in the North Atlantic.
Well, we can genetically connect the petroleum to its source, but I'm not sure about plastic, although I'm assuming that plastic that's made in one country can look a little different than plastic that's made in another country.
Well, as Kara said, it's a global process, and the base chemistry, the polymer chemistry, is often manufactured in one country. The raw pellets are shipped to another country. The plastic's manufactured in a different country, and then the end user is often a different country. So it's a very intricate loop that you have to follow, and I don't know if there's any way that we can backtrack.
Thank you both so much for talking with us, Giora Proskorovsky and Kara Lavender-Law of the Sea Education Association.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.